King of the Worshipers! Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location. Today, we're going to talk about how a high-fat diet is bad, but how a high-fiber diet protects against the flu virus. Some new research, a lot of good reporting today on health and healing. I might mention also that because of the bloodshed, the needless bloodshed that is occurring today in the Middle East, in Israel, we're going to do a special report. I have two guests. One is by audio clip, and we're going to talk about Trump congratulating Israel after over 60 Palestinians were killed yesterday and several thousand wounded. And then I'm going to talk about what the mainstream media, I watched all the mainstream media I could last night, and how they're defending Israel. And I'm thinking, wow, what cognitive disconnect or what compromise of principle would allow a person with a high level of education, clear and accurate intellectual capacity, to completely abrogate their moral responsibility to tell the truth, starting not just with Fox. We expect fascist Fox and all of its contributors to align with the Israeli agenda, but all members of Congress, except for Bernie Sanders, and the radio media as well. So we have two people on today. One is going to talk for 7 minutes about this. A very strong report. I think you'll enjoy it. At least her honesty. And this is going to be from TVT's Emma Viganlund. And then Ray McGovern. I'm interviewing Danny a little later after the show. But Ray McGovern will be on. He was just arrested, by the way, in the CIA nominees' hearings, and he'll give you some insight. It's 55 years now in Washington, D.C., 27 as a CIA analyst, and he'll have his own perspective. So we have a lot to share, plus if time permits, I don't know that it will, but we'll have a special commentary from Chris Hedges called Killing Gaza that's posted on Truthdig. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And there is a new study from Monash University in Australia that looked at dietary fiber and how it increases survival in influenza-infected mice by setting the immune system at a healthy level of responsiveness. That's according to the peer-reviewed journal Immunity. So the takeaway message is simple. A high-fiber diet blunts harmful excessive immune responses in the lungs while boosting antiviral immunity by activating T cells. Now, this just by itself, could you imagine if they used a more complementary, holistic, integrative approach with all the known antivirals that we could put in there, like bitter melon juice? Anyone I know is coming down with a cold or flu, I'm immediately taking one glass of bitter melon juice. It's bitter. But then you sweeten it with Manuka honey at a high percentage. Generally, it's Manuka comes no percentage, 5, 10, 15, 20. And then you go way up from there to 500. Now, 500 comes in a little jar. It's expensive. It's about $95, but it's worth it. I travel with that because, boy, if you have any problems, even just being in an airplane, I'll take a little tiny spoon. I'm talking about a mini spoon. And I take that spoon, and every hour when I'm on an airplane, I put Manuka honey in the back of my throat because that's extremely antiviral and antibacterial. But if you have a cold or flu coming on, and you use green tea, and use the mushroom complex, and Palo de Arco, and bee propolis, and wild oregano oil, along with a high-fiber drink, like a put a pint of blueberries, put a pint of pomegranates in there with 2 teaspoons of lemon juice. Oh, you're going to kill almost everything that could hurt you. But just with fiber alone, it was enough to stop the virus, the influenza infected virus in the body. And that's because the dual benefits are mediated by changes in the composition of the gut bacteria, leading to an increase in the production of short-chain fatty acids through the microbial fermentation of dietary fiber. So, get your fiber and help prevent flu. Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine did a study. They looked at 11,000 American adults, and they concluded that increasing physical activity at a rather high level for 6 straight years, especially those in their 40s and 50s, is associated with a decreased risk of heart failure. And that's a condition that affects up to 6 million Americans. So let's look at this again. If you exercise 6 days a week, I suggest building up, starting what you can do, don't overstress, but build up gradually to where you're doing about, I would say, 200 minutes of exercise a week on the minimum, and ideally closer to 300-350 minutes of exercise per week. Now, that's not competitive. That's not if you're racing. That's just to keep yourself and your heart in ideal physical condition. See, what we don't understand, if you're the average American, is that unlike heart attacks, in which the heart muscle dies, heart failure is marked by a long-term chronic inability of the heart to pump enough blood or to pump it hard enough to bring needed oxygen to the body. And the leading cause of hospitalizations in those 65 and older is they have risk factors, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and all leading to heart failure. So we want to keep our heart healthy. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. So that's good. Also, it's been shown that if we exercise for 10 years on a regular basis, including interval training, that we can increase our lifespan by upwards of 3 years. So many people have been exercising throughout their life. So it's completely reasonable to assume then if you've exercised from, let's say you're 60, and you've exercised since you were 15, teenager, you could be adding around 12 years to 15 years onto your lifespan. So that's good. From the University of Guelph in Ontario, they looked at the omega-3 and the omega-6 fatty acids in the diet, and they found that they alter gene expression, especially if you're overweight. This is published in Physiological Genomics. So it simply means this. The essential fats in the diet can play a role in regulating protein secretion in the muscles by changing the way genes associated with secretion act. And what is called alpha-linolenic acid, or ALA, and linolenic acid, LA, are plant-based. We'll make it simple. The plant-based essential fats, these are called poly, which means multiple, unsaturated fatty acids. And then the humans consume that. So when you have an avocado, handful of walnuts, when you're having some coconut, you're getting the really, really good fats, the alpha-linolenic and the linolenic acids. The ALA is an omega-3 fatty acid. LA is an omega-6 fatty acid. And they show benefit to your brain. They reduce the amount of inflammation in your body. They reduce the risk of heart disease. So previous studies have shown that proteins secreted from the muscles, what we call skeletal muscle secretome, help regulate signaling of the metabolic activities such as your muscle fiber formation and the function of insulin-producing beta cells in the pancreas. And so this just means that you're going to have more lean muscle, less obesity, less heart disease, less diabetes. So just get your good, healthy fat sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, tahini, your nut butters, flaxseed. They're all good for you. University of Wisconsin looked at inflammation and the innate immune system, which is, by the way, our first line of defense against illness and injury. However, if the inflammatory response goes on for too long, it can lead to a condition called chronic inflammation. That's where your body's essentially attacking itself, wreaking biological havoc on your organs and your systems. And chronic inflammation is a factor in inflammatory bowel disease and arthritis and asthma, heart disease and diabetes and cancer. And you don't want it. So a recent study described in two separate papers published in the Journal of Nutrition showed that yogurt can help dampen chronic inflammation. And they weren't exactly sure why, but I'll suggest that you do not have to have yogurt from a cow. You can have yogurt from coconut, from brown rice. There are many different forms of yogurt that are non-dairy. It's the probiotics in it that is the anti-inflammatory. Because the average person, what happens is they get a pain. Once that pain comes, they want the pain to go away. So they go out and they get an over-the-counter medication like aspirin, naproxen, then there are a prescription one like prednisone or hydrocortisone. Now that will help mitigate the effects of chronic inflammation. Yes, but enormous side effects. You blow up like a balloon. your immune system is substantially compromised. You're far more likely to come down with a serious illness. So that's why I try to get people weaned off of those as best as possible. And so if you want to help reduce inflammation in the body, stay away from anything that causes inflammation. The top five inflammatories that are common to the American diet and the Canadian diet and the British diet would be sugar, alcohol in any form, fried foods, refined carbohydrates, and meat products. Well, there you have hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, pizzas, colas. Yeah, that's all the things, coffee. That's what causes inflammation. So stay away from those and watch how quickly your body can respond. Also from the University of Texas, an article that talked about the relationship between socioeconomic status and your brain. And what it means is that research has shown that a developing child's brain structure and function can be adversely affected when the child is raised in an environment lacking adequate education or nutrition and access to health. And by the way, this is not based upon race. And because so often in America, the moment we talk about poor environments and poor inner city, we're talking about people of color, and it is certainly true in many areas. But in point of fact, your brain will be adversely affected if you're a child growing up in a Caucasian background, a Latino background, African-American background. The culture is secondary to the things that you need as a child if you don't get. So that's why we should have been working with all this money that we have made in our society and putting some of that back into helping better schools, better parental skills, helping people who are pregnant, couples or singles. What does it mean to be a parent? What are the skills you're going to need? What support system do you have? How can you be a better mother and father, or better father or mother as a single parent? So the child does not become victimized by what you're deficient in. And we don't do anything like this. It's like it's non-existent. But it is existent, and we should pay some attention to it. I believe that we should take at least If we simply had the courage to go on a national strike, which is one of the things we should do just to bring this country to a standstill and get everyone's attention, no matter what their political persuasion, just ask a basic question. Do you care about children? Do you care about them? Either yes or no. Don't tell me whether you care or don't care while they're in the womb. Do you care about them when they're born? Now, if you say, yes, we care about these youngsters and kids, then why don't we have an independent group of people who are strong in backgrounds in child development, environmental sciences, cognitive sciences, nutrition sciences, a whole group not affiliated with any industry come together and say, all right, what is the best environment for a child to flourish, to learn, to grow? What do they need? And then look what we can do as a model. Start with just one single town, one city, and then in that environment, create what the child needs, the parent needs, and help them and have a support system so whenever there's an issue, no matter what the issue, there are people there to help. It makes an enormous difference when you have an extended support system versus having to go it alone. And if we could do that and then show the difference in the development of those children and the family and how they prospered, how they were not then victims of their environment, but exceeded the limitations of the environment. Think what that would do. And then we could start to implement that in every city in the country. So we have solutions, but we don't have the sense of focus and the urgency of helping other people. We're so determined to help ourselves. Not everybody, by the way. In fact, I keep reposting this one video. I just posted one yesterday to show you about human nature. I don't know the city. It could be in the United States, it could be in Mexico. I don't know where it's at. But it's a very busy highway. And a dog grows across the road and is on a little tiny walkway and is shivering and sitting there because it's going to get killed if it gets back in the road. And a citizen stops, goes over, and you see this, waiting and waiting and waiting for the traffic to slow down. He's picked up this strange dog, and it's in his hands, and then he finally runs back across the street. Do you know I got more comments from people about that yesterday than anything else? And I'm posting sometimes up to 90 different posts a day, and I think about all the people all over the world who could be, you know, listening to the radio or going to this place. So I want to always look at universal truths and that, you know, that move people, which should, you know, things that touch our heart should stimulate our mind into action. How could you go into any community and look at all the children, all the poverty, and then say, what can I do? I can do something. We can all do something. So I believe that that's one of the things we should try. And I'm willing to do this in any city in America, but I have just to get the permission of the city to work with us, to allow us to help the citizens. Oh, and by the way, to Rochelle from, quote, Dear Gary, have you heard that Huey Lewis has been diagnosed with Meniere's disease? He can't sing, and that's sad. Listening to you for only 42 years. I didn't know that. If anyone wants to put the word out to Huey Lewis that if he wants my help, he can just go to prnstudio@gmail.com, and I can certainly try to help him as I would anyone else. But sometimes when you help someone who is well-known and respected, they frequently want to pass that information on to the audience, and that's a good thing if they do that. That is the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we have Ray McGovern on hold. And we're going to go to Ray. And we're also going to go right out of the break and come back so Ray can hear it. I want you to hear what this woman reporter has to say. She says, Trump congratulates Israel after what's now over 60 Palestinians killed. And she is, just so you know who she is, because I want to commend her on good reporting. This is TVT Emma Vigeland, V-I-G-E-L-A-N-D. Back in a moment.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg, plead for your sympathy, I don't mind, cause you mean that much to me. Ain't too proud of that, and you know it. Please don't leave me, girl.
Hear about our Trump tweets in the media. That's the only thing they seem to care about some days. And they have a point in the sense it does display how unbelievably unhinged he is. But often the discussion of tweets is at the detriment or to the detriment of policy and more substantive discussions. And it's more because he offends their sensibilities and is uncouth, which I don't really care too much about. What I do care a lot about, and the media and the rest of us should care a lot about too, is Trump's callous disregard for lives of brown people, which was perfectly exemplified today in this tweet. Big day for Israel. Congratulations, he said this morning. This is, of course, in reference to the Jerusalem embassy, which is officially opening today. The United States is moving our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. But you know what else happened this morning? At least 37 Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces during clashes at the Gaza border on Monday, the largest number of fatalities suffered in one day since the latest round of protests began more than 6 weeks ago, the Palestinian Ministry of Health announced. The toll increased to 41 at the time of filming this piece. The demonstrations were taking place hours before the new U.S. embassy was due to officially open in Jerusalem. The Palestinian Health Ministry said more than 1,600 had suffered injuries and that many of the dead had not yet been identified. CNN journalists near the Gaza-Israeli border heard gunfire in spurts and saw a tank moving towards the fence in the border area of Malaka. Israeli drones also dropped tear gas over a crowd of protesters. More than 80 people have been shot and killed by Israeli soldiers since the latest wave of protests began in March, according to a CNN count based on the Palestinian Ministry of Health figures. But congratulations, Israel. They are shooting unarmed protesters in those protesters' lands. They are occupying, against international law, the territory of the Palestinians and murdering protesters that are simply walking towards their border in a peaceful protest. And this embassy move, which is deliberately trying to rub Israel's dominance over the Palestinians in the Palestinians' faces, is the only thing that Donald Trump acknowledges this morning. Not the illegality of the Israeli occupation, not the deaths of the protesters, not the apartheid state that Netanyahu and his cronies have created after decades and decades and decades of no peace, despite saying they want peace. No. Congrats on the embassy with no nuance. And today, Jared Kushner, who is inexplicably still in a senior foreign policy role, despite being unable to get security clearance, spoke on Donald Trump's behalf to a crowd that included Netanyahu and another person who is maybe equally as important behind this decision to move the embassy. Let's see if you can spot him out.
The United States stands with Israel because we both believe in freedom. We stand together because we both believe in human rights. We stand together because we believe democracy is worth defending. And the United States stands with Israel because we believe, we know, that it is the right thing to do.
That is Jared Kushner saying to great applause that the United States believes in human rights along with Israel hours after over 40 Palestinian protesters were killed to a cheering Sheldon Adelson, the Trump mega donor, who is a huge part of this decision. How big of a part, you may ask? Sheldon Adelson gave $25 million to a political action committee backing Trump and $5 million to his inauguration. But Trump wasn't always pals with Sheldon. During the campaign, he said this about Adelson's relationship with Marco Rubio, who was running against Trump at the time. Sheldon Adelson is looking to give big dollars to Rubio because he feels he can mold him into his perfect little puppet. I agree. Who is Adelson's puppet now, Donald Trump? Because it looks like you. He's sitting in the audience watching your errand boy son-in-law do his bidding through you. In fact, Adelson was such a big part of Donald Trump's policy decision here that he even offered to help pay for the embassy move to Jerusalem. This is one of the biggest examples of corruption I've honestly ever seen. This is a man, Sheldon Adelson, who is a zealot, a religious zealot, who doesn't care what happens to the Palestinian people, who wants to dominate the region, determining our foreign policy as a nation directly through his campaign contributions. And yes, Jared Kushner has a cozy relationship with Netanyahu, even bragging that Netanyahu slept in his childhood bed when he was a kid. Oh, goody. But do you think Trump would bend to the will of Jared Kushner? No. It was the money that got him to push for this embassy change. It was because he was Adelson's puppet, is Adelson's puppet. But here's some more from Kushner.
As we have seen from the protests of the last month and even today, those provoking violence are part of the problem and not part of the solution.
So those provoking violence are a part of the problem and not a part of the solution. I agree, Jared, if you were referring to the actual provokers of violence. How can you stand there with a straight face, speaking to a smirking Lindsey Graham, by the way, and say that the protesters who were just hours ago mowed down with bullets are the ones provoking the violence? Hours before, over 40 people died. This is Orwellian. This is doublespeak. This is absolutely disgusting and wrong. And this is an exertion of United States foreign policy for religious reasons. We can sit on our high horse and look at the terrorism in Muslim Middle Eastern countries and say, oh, wow, look how primitive, like, you know, Bill Maher will say. We are doing the exact same thing with this. Oligarchs in our country, like Sheldon Adelson, are inserting their wacko political beliefs into our religious beliefs, into our foreign policy, and are pushing the U.S. to back a country that is overseeing bloodshed, an apartheid state. I don't say that lightly. And they stand up there and they talk of peace. Again, the Russia story is important, but all I hear is about how Russian oligarchs run the show there. They are running the show here, American oligarchs. We are throwing a lot of financial and military support behind an apartheid regime that is committing human rights abuses daily. I have a new litmus test for the next president of the United States on foreign policy. We need a president who will stand up to Israel and stop this. This must end. Our history books will look back.
Okay, that's her perspective. Last night, when I was looking at Martha McCallum on Fox and Sean Hannity on Fox, and Sean Hannity is the perfect spokesperson for the president. He should be his press secretary because he does not have the capacity at this point to challenge him on any issue. He is just there as a cheerleader, but like the whole network is there as a cheerleaders. And everyone today, I was just watching before I came on the air, I just wanted to see what's their take on this. And instead of looking at the historical context of the conflict, looking at the vast majority of the Palestinian people standing way back from the fence with no arms, in silence, and then there are the Israeli snipers putting a bullet in their head. How do you justify that? You have one of the most sophisticated air forces in the world. You have satellites. You have drones. You have over 200 nuclear weapons. You have submarines, including nuclear submarines. You have the Mossad. You are working in cooperation, but are smarter than the Mossad's much smarter than the CIA. And you have all these soldiers in completely defensive position with bulletproof vests, helmets, guard shields in case there's a rock that should be thrown in their direction. And you have all these weapons, you've used cluster bombs, you've used white phosphorus, but somehow you're the person that is threatened by a group of people who don't have running water, don't have medicines, don't have food in adequate amounts. Malnutrition is epidemic, have no rights. And that's the entire message across all the American media. So AIPAC, kudos to you. You did a magnificent job in making sure that not a single journalist had the courage to speak out and tell the truth. We're going to go to our guest. By the way, we are heard all over the world. And I just want to acknowledge one of our people listening from South Africa, a native South African, Tame Malambasi from South Africa. Thank you for listening and sharing the information. What I understand, you're an older gentleman, and that you share the information that you hear on this program, the articles, the videos, and guest information. We appreciate it. Now let's go over and say hello to my guest sitting by is Ray McGovern. Nice to have you with us today, Ray.
Thank you, Gary.
Ray McGovern, I gave everyone your bio a little earlier, but Ray, I want to go into your perspective now on what you're seeing happen today and yesterday, and it'll continue. It's not going to go away, where you have the American media not willing to recognize the nature of the conflict, not willing to be objective in looking at the Palestinian position, only the Israeli position, having only guests on who support the Israeli position, and then saying that it's Hamas and they're a terrorist organization. So if you would, please. The Israeli violence against citizens now constitutes, in my opinion, humanitarian crimes under the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, as well as the Israelis using a civilian presence to shield its military activities. And there's a terribly false assumption that all Gazians protest must be initiated by Hamas and for violent ends. It ignores completely other factors and sentiments in Gaza or the possibility that Gazans can protest peacefully irrespective of Hamas. Unfortunately, most of those Palestinian leaders who led and preached nonviolence and peaceful marches and boycotts and sit-ins are either in jail, in exile, or dead. Mubarak Awad, known as the Palestinian Gandhi, was forced by the Israeli government into exile in 1988. In fact, foreign media is referring to the protesting Gazians as the Palestinian Gandhis, although you won't hear that in the New York Times, Fox, CNN, or MSNBC. And yet every day for the past month, tens of thousands of Palestinians return daily to join the protests and marches and face Israeli bullets at the Israeli-Gaza border, on their own property, as this woman said. And I'm reminded of a photo of a huge rally in Gaza before the protest began. And behind the podium was a huge drop-down display with the pictures of Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Nelson Mandela. And this is the image that is completely being ignored by our mainstream media. And unfortunately, when the words of nonviolence in equating Palestinians with a new path of nonviolent resistance as a weapon against tyranny come from the mouths of Hamas' main leader, Hania, it is denied. Also, there is a new generation of young Palestinian activists who oppose Hamas's past history and violent tactics. And one 20-something Palestinian peace leader said in an interview that the gun is no longer a choice. It is a burden on anybody who carries it. So clearly, Hamas must realize its earlier strategy of violence did not work, and the apartheid and ghettoizing of Gaza proves it is in the aftermath of Israel's bombing and subservient response, the younger generation is rapidly against Hamas. But for the most part, aside from the occasional Molotov cocktail or rock throwing or children's kite flying above Israel troops with a homemade bomb attached, we need to see the Gazan demonstrators in the light of Gandhi and King's civil rights and freedom movements. And the fact is that during the past month, Hamas has refused to order any rocket attacks and has put its full weight behind peaceful nonviolence. And at least in other nations throughout the world, not the United States, atrocities committed against the people of Gaza is gaining more attention than in the past. So Since you have long been a nonviolent peace activist and a friend of the Berrigan brothers, what is your assessment of these protests, and should we be seeing them as a nonviolent demonstration in the tradition of Gandhi, King, and others? And what is your opinion about the support the United States government, our media, and even our churches have given to the Israeli troops under as they murdered protesters? The forum is yours.
Well, thanks, Gary. I guess I would say first off that it's a considerable shame to me that none of this would take place without the full support of the American government. Trump is perhaps the worst, but it's a long tradition of 100% support, whatever the Israelis do. Now, I'd like to go back to, before I forget about Gandhi. You mentioned Gandhi. Well, do you remember the film? It was a very realistic reproduction of the Great Salt March, where people were not gunned down, but cudgeled down and used sticks and rocks. People, peaceful demonstrators went up to the equivalent of the wall. I advise your listeners to take a look at those clips. They're available on YouTube. It's very similar to that kind of nonviolent demonstration. This time, people killed at 100 yards plus with sniper bullets. But I want to go back to just kind of draw on something special that I have, and that is age. Okay, I'm 78 years old. That means I was 8 years old when we celebrated wildly the creation of the State of Israel. I grew up in the Bronx. About a third of my neighbors who were of Jewish extraction. We learned all about what happened to the Jews in World War II. We were ecstatic. Our celebration went on for days. No one ever told me, Gary, no one ever told me that there were people there already. They were called Palestinians. They had lived there for 1,000 years, okay? And they were being displaced. What, a handful of them? No, over 700. Thousand displaced or killed or just driven into places like Gaza. And that's why you have third generation now of refugees from the Nakba. That's what the Palestinians call it. It's the translation is a catastrophe, the catastrophe that befell those Palestinian people at the hands of the emplacement under full U.S. support of the State of Israel. So when you talk about the media today, it's a direct line. Americans don't know. Ask an American on the street whether people there in Palestine before Israel was created. You say, well, of course not. Yeah. So that's what it goes back to. And when the Palestinians choose the nonviolent path, I mean, Hamas was denied the ability to bring any kind of weaponry into these demonstrations. There were no flags allowed except a PLO flag, no Hamas flags or anything like that. They deliberately got together all these resistance groups and said, look, let's do this in the real Gandhian tradition. Let's not brandish anything except an odd Palestinian flag. Young people, we can't prevent them from throwing rocks, but they're not going to hit anybody at 100 yards. And that's what it was. Now, for Jared Kushner to say, look, the people excite violence. Excite violence. They're part of the problem, not part of the solution. And then for an African-American presidential spokesman, I mean, cynicism is not dead in Washington. He got up yesterday and said, this is all propaganda. Gaza? Stuff that's going on in Gaza? It's all propaganda. Now, as your editorialist mentioned, she said 40 people dead. Well, now it's 58, of course. And the figures for wounded are 2,700, okay, just yesterday, moving the aggregate figures from the Friday demonstrations up above 10,000 wounded and close to 100 killed. Well, now, if that's provoking violence without any weapons, going up there and being mowed down, as Teresa Al-Qaddous on Democracy Now! Pointed out, they picked them off methodically. It's not like they shoot them all at the same time. They pick their people and they shoot them in the head. And the ones that they shoot in the feet, or in the torso. They're using butterfly bullets. And for those who don't know what they are, they enter the normal way, but then they open like a butterfly, and the exit wound is often the size of a golf ball and even the size of a larger cylindrical object. So these things are causing permanent damage. Shamed that our country would deliberately sit by and watch this happen. I think that a lot of people are out there. I was out speaking before the White House yesterday. I'll be down DuPont Circle again this afternoon. This should be a call to action because we hear a lot of people complaining, and a lot of people complaining particularly under Trump. But maybe I'll just stop here with my recitation of my favorite principle. It's called the NOAA principle, okay? And this is what it is. No more awards for predicting rain. Awards only for building arcs. Gary, we need to build some arcs. We need to get people together because I do have a basic faith in the decency of Americans. If they know what's going on there, I think there's a good chance we can stop it.
I agree, but we cannot stop it unilaterally. You have to have the entire Middle East involved, at least those who seek peace, but Saudi Arabia doesn't want peace. You have the United Arab Emirates don't. By the way, the big story yesterday, Ray, was the U.S. moving its embassy to Jerusalem along with its blessings from the right-wing evangelical community. Mm-hmm. All countries have condemned the move except the United States and Israel. Even the United States' surrogate wife, Saudi Arabia, opposes it. Why is the move so volatile and dangerous?
Well, that is a universally recognized Jerusalem as the multi-confessional city. In other words, Jews, Muslims, and Christians share that city. Under international law, it was a violation of international law for Israel to occupy any part of Jerusalem. Jerusalem has a special juridical status. That's where the holy shrines are. That's where some of the violence began when people started to trundle on the holy shrines. So for Trump to do this unilaterally, well, he does lots of stuff unilaterally, doesn't he? He's abrogated the Iran treaty where we have deliberately for 10 years restrained any possibility Iran would make a nuclear weapon. So what I think is needed here, and what I continue to hope for, is that that countries who have been through this turmoil before, and I refer specifically to Germany, which I know best, I've lived for 5 years there, that they will stop acting like children. They will stop acting like adolescents, and they'll start acting like adults, because the kinds of things that Trump are doing are hurting Western Europe and Eastern Europe much more than hurting the United States. And we'll have to see how they react to the U.S. abrogation of the Iran deal. But there was no reason for it. And for Netanyahu to get up there and use contrived, forged, manufactured evidence that he got from Mossad, the Israeli intelligence agency, that was a little much, because we know that evidence. We've seen it before. And Gareth Porter, one of our associates and a veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity, wrote it all up a week ago, saying, look, this is chapter and verse from Mossad. Nobody believes it. Mr. President, you can believe it if you want to, but it's a crock.
Final question for you, Ray. Give us your insight into what many perceive as one of the most cunning, narcissist leaders on the planet, Netanyahu.
Well, Netanyahu would be in jail if it weren't for Adelson, the multi-billionaire, and Trump. Netanyahu, he's been charged with all manner of corruption and crimes, the U.S. has bailed him out, and now, of course, he's extremely popular because he was able to get Trump to move in an unlawful way the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. So Netanyahu, people need to know that there is film available where Netanyahu is speaking at a little gathering in a home, and it's, it don't know if he even knew that the film was going, but he says, you know, they're really a piece of work. And deceive them. They'll go along with anything. All you have to do is invoke our history, and man, they're in the palm of our hand. Now, that's Netanyahu on film. What do we have from the American side? Well, when George Bush was so enthralled, so impressed by this strong man, Ariel Sharon, okay? The first thing he did at the first cabinet meeting, and we have this from one of the people there, the Treasury Secretary O'Neill, he said, well, anybody know Ariel Sharon? And Powell, who was secretary, said, yes, sir, I know him. Bush didn't ask for Powell's opinion. He just said, well, I think he's the real deal. We're going to give him his head. We're going to stop being this, honest broker stuff. But we'll give him his head. And Powell, to his credit, said, sir, that would be a major, major fracture of the peace there and lead to unrest. And what Bush said was, well, you know, sometimes some little hostilities can come out really well. Be a good deal. Now, how do I know that? O'Neill wrote it down in his book, okay? Now, at the same time, this was all going on, with Bush bowing to the false intelligence he got from Ariel Sharon and his group, General Brent Scowcroft, national advisor, before Bush, of course, national security advisor to Gerald Ford and others, he was appointed by George W. Bush to be head of what was called the President's Foreign Advisory Board on Intelligence. Okay, now what did he say? He told the Financial Times at this particular juncture of time, and I quote: "Ariel Sharon has our president mesmerized. Ariel Sharon has our president wrapped around his little finger." Period. End quote. Now, Scowcroft was the master of but he knew exactly what he wanted to say. What did he want to say? And why did he say that? Because he saw that Israel was exerting incredible influence over George W. Bush. They were largely responsible for the decision to go into Iraq. And I owe my faithful States, I'm going to tell the American people what's going on here. Now, he was immediately cashiered, welcome at the White House anymore, but at least he had done the right things. This is the kind of evidence, this is the kind of indication. What George Washington, our very first president, warned about, he warned about entangling alliances. He warned of passionate attachments, one country to another, on the assumption that our interests and that our objectives were the same. Now, he was trying to prevent us from getting into a war. We're under France with England, and he successfully did that. But now it's the same thing. We have this identity of Israel. Why do we give them billions of dollars every year? But, you know, when it comes, push comes to shove, what the Israelis are doing in the Middle East is to our long-term detriment. And every Arab and every person in the whole world knows that Netanyahu could not do that without the full support of the United States. And that is shameful, especially in view of what happened today.
Ray, thank you very much for being on. We continue to look forward to your insights. We appreciate them.
You're most welcome.
Ray McGovern. Now we're going to go over and finish our program today by doing a little consumer update. The illegally sneaking in a rollout of smart meters to bypass thorough oversight. And on the phone now is our newsmaker, is Deborah Kopold. And she's an environmental consultant to physicians and attorneys who are on environmental-related illnesses and has developed overseen for the passage of legislation and initiatives to protect the public. Nice to have you back today.
Thanks for having me again, Gary.
Here are the points I'd like you to go very quickly. how New York is ignoring what other states have confirmed about the environmental and health risks of smart meters in G5, and the illegal attempt underway now by Con Edison and New York State Department to install G5 smart meters in outlying counties as a pilot to the implementation throughout New York City, and what we can do to help stop that, because we do not need this. We don't want it. It would be an environmental illness nightmare if this goes through.
I think you're absolutely right. I'll start with the first question. And I think the answer really goes to the fact that we have a lot of public corruption in New York. Specifically, you had Amy Pullen, who was chair of the Energy Committee in the Assembly side until a few weeks ago. And she has sat on a smart meter bill that would have had a guaranteed opt-out the way they have in other states. And there was always an excuse as to why she wouldn't move on the bill. A couple years ago, Cuomo had a bill to basically force these so-called smart schools and force wireless technology in all the schools. It didn't pass by much. But at the time, I remember the night after it passed, when they were doing the election report on the news, somewhere buried in the news was the fact that during the first Sheldon Silver corruption trial, Amy Pullen was directly asked, do you think the fact that you own $250,000 in Con Ed stock affects your ability to regulate them? She said, I'd have to think about it. Well, that's the first problem. The second problem is Governor Cuomo, who invited the 5G companies into New York. And as you know, a lot of us were running around the month of March and April, right up into April, to get a provision out of the budget where Governor Cuomo would have gutted the general municipal law that would have gutted local planning and zoning and forced 5G towers up on utility poles right in front of your house. There's no legal recourse you would have had. Now, the good news is that corruption can be stymied. We were able to defeat Governor Cuomo. The legislature took it out of their respective budgets, the Assembly and the Senate, and they told him no, and it came out. Now, it'll probably try to come back in again in January, but that was a good example where Republicans, Democrats, supervisors, mayors, even wired cable TV companies all banded together to stop this crazy scheme that was also illegal. It would have violated home rule, but to tell you how lawless Cuomo is, when NYCOM, the New York Conference of Mayors, told him that it was against the law, he said he didn't care. So they would have had to file an Article 78 to undo the damage, but in the meantime, the rollouts would have been permitted to occur. So that's the good news. As well, he tried to change some state rulemaking. It would have gutted CEQA, State Environmental Quality Review Act, review of cell towers, but that provision is still in force. NYSDEC took our testimony and quoted it when they took it out of the proposed environmental impact statement, and they're not going to go ahead with that proposal. So that's the good news, is some of these powerful forces can be defeated. With smart meters, going back to the smart meters, we have to now turn our attention there. Con Ed is aggressively going to be rolling these out in New York City. One of their subsidiaries, Orange and Rockland, which is covers Orange-Rockland, part of Sullivan County, they approved a further rollout of smart meters that had been previously partially approved in Rockland. But they did it by circumventing a rule that says that you can't roll things out if there's certain fees accrued that it, you know, are higher than either $300,000 or a certain percentage of their overall budget. And we think that one of the charges that's accruing, besides the opt-out charges, which they haven't fully factored in, of course, if they don't tell people there's an opt-out, then people won't opt out, and then there's no charge per se. But we think that they are charging people to actually meter their own electricity. So with an old analog electromechanical meter, which is safe, it doesn't cost electricity for it to run. But for one of these wireless smart meters, it does. And then when I raised that in my petition for rehearing on the rollout, Con Ed's lawyer came back with a schematic diagram. I had an engineer look at it. He said, there's nothing in this diagram that shows that they're metering their electricity separately. When I called up their lawyer directly, I said, why don't you produce an affidavit saying that this does what you say it does and isn't going to pass back this charge to the consumers? And he said,
okay,
Deborah,
I need you to answer one last question here. For those in the audience who are not familiar with G5, just give us a litany of what G5 is and why we should be very concerned about it.
this is the next generation of cell towers. It involves frequencies in the terahertz band, billions of cycles a second, higher than radar. And because the way they would have to operate, they have to be, the towers have to be spaced closer together. They would be on poles, these cell phone towers, literally outside of your house or the size of a refrigerator. And the radiation they would put into your house would boost the levels into the levels of severe and extreme concern per the Building Biology Institute guidelines. The radiation is too high. The fact that it's continuous and that you wouldn't have control of the radiation in your own home is why it's so serious. And the fact that all these companies have aggressively gone to these states to try to gut your rights via local planning and zoning is very dangerous. And they were successful in 13 states. Before we stopped it in New York. It had been stopped in California, now New York, but not in other places like North Carolina, Minnesota, Delaware, Kansas, Indiana, Arizona. So it is extremely dangerous, and it's all for so that you could download a movie at hyperspeed, which is not a public necessity. It's not a public utility need. It's not like water or sewer or even phone access. So this is what we're doing, is we're expanding our, you know, levels of radiation for these so-called conveniences. And people really need to understand, you need to hardwire in your house that you do not want to be sitting in a cloud of electric smog all day, and you don't want transmitter beaming your TV, your phone, your cable all into your house. You want that all hardwired, and certainly you should have the choice. So that's why it's extremely dangerous. It represents a continuous radiation exposure, an extremely high radiation exposure, and contrary to people's thoughts, it's not just the phone you need to worry about. It's the continual exposures from transmitters, and moving in and out of transmitters gives many people more exposure than they're getting sort of individually from their cell phones. So that's why it's extremely dangerous. The smart meters are sort of akin to 5G in that they're putting a transmitter on the side of your house. So it's another form of kind of government-forced radiation that you can't control. Anybody should be opting out of a smart meter, but particularly with Con Ed, you really have to start intervening in these rate cases. I'm doing it in Orange and Rockland. I recommend that people in New York attend these rate hearings, get information about the smart meters. New Mexico just defeated the smart meters after a two-year rate hearing, so they need to be armed with all kinds of information to go to these regulators and the administrative law judges and say, we don't want this. ONR and Con Ed have not proven that it's safe. They've had pilot programs that don't demonstrate it's safe. It doesn't demonstrate that it saves money, which is their big raison d'etre, so people really need to call them out on that. There's evidence from insurance adjusters that they cause fires, both in businesses and in homes, and they were not, they do not seem to have passed. They're not UL certified. They're not grounded properly. The surge arresters don't stop electric. There's no surge arrester to stop electromagnetic pollution from coming into the house. Any other electronic that you have in your house has to be properly grounded, and it's outrageous. They don't follow code. They create interference with other FCC devices, which is illegal, and they're getting away with it, and they will continue to get away with it.
So, Deborah, we're out of time. Do you have a site that people can go to for more information?
I posted a lot about the smart meter, but I will start doing so. You can check out my blog on wirelessrighttoknow.com.
Wirelessrighttoknow.com.
Yeah, Deborah, by the end of the week, I'll have some more information.
We'll be in touch with you. Deborah Kopald, K-O-P-A-L-D. By the way, she holds degrees from Harvard University in economics and MBA from MIT Sloan School of Management. That's our consumer update. Thank you all for listening. And read the articles I have on my PRN.fm, on the homepage. Download them. Share them with people. It's important we share the information, everyone. Have a nice day.